refusing anything but water and taking only enough bread to still the cries of his stomach. For 40 days he kept his regimen. On the 41st day he was found collapsed before the altar of the mother. Grand Maester Monken did what he could to heal the king. So too did the boy High Septon. But his miracles were at an end. The king joined the seven in the 10th year of his reign in 171 AC.
Malicious rumours that followed in the wake of Viserys's ascension, begun, some say, by the pen of Lady Meyer of House Stokeworth, suggested that Viserys poisoned the king in order to finally gain the throne after a decade and more of waiting. Others have suggested that Viserys poisoned Baelor for the good of the realm. Since the Septon King had come to believe that the Seven called on him to convert all the unbelievers in his realm. This would have led to a war with the North and the Iron Islands that would have caused great turmoil. The Nine Mistresses of Aegon the Fourth, the Unworthy. Lady Phelaena Stokeworth, 10 years older than the king. Lady Phelaena made him a man in 149, when Aegon was 14. When a king's guard found them abed together in 151, his father wed Phelaena to his master at arms, Lucas Lothston, and persuaded the king to name Lothston Lord of Harrenhal in order to remove Phelaena from court. However, over the next 2 years, Aegon paid frequent visits to Harrenhal. Children by Phelaena Stokeworth, none acknowledged. Meget, Mary Meg, the young and buxom wife of a blacksmith. While riding near Fair Market in 155, Aegon's horse threw a shoe, and when he sought out the local smith, he came to notice the man's young wife. He went on to buy her for 7 gold dragons, and the threat of Sir Geoffrey Staunton of the Kingsguard. Meget was installed in a house in King's Landing. She and Aegon were even wed in a secret ceremony conducted by a mummer playing a septon. Meget gave her prince 4 children in as many years. Prince Viserys put an end to it, returning Meget to her husband and placing the daughters with the faith to be trained as septors. Meget was beaten to death within a year by the blacksmith. Children by Mary Meg. Alisan, Lily, Willow, Rosie. Lady Casella Vaith, daughter of a Dornish lord. After the submission of Sunspear, Aegon escorted the hostages that the king had gathered from the lords of Dorne back to King's Landing. Among them was Casella Vaith, a willowy maid with green eyes and pale white blonde hair, whom Aegon ended up keeping hostage in his own chambers. When the Dornishmen revolted and murdered King Daeron, all the hostages were to be killed, and Aegon, by then bored of her, returned Casella to her place with the other prisoners. However, the new king Baelor pardoned all the hostages and personally took them back to Dorne. Casella never wed, and in her old age she was consumed by the delusion that she had been Aegon's one true love and that he would soon send for her. Children by Casella Vaith, none. Beleger Othrys, the Black Pearl of Braavos. Smuggler, trader, sometime pirate, captain of the Widow Wind. Born of a union between a Braavosi merchant's daughter and an envoy from the Summer Isles. After Nereis fell pregnant and almost died in 161, King Baelor sent Aegon to Braavos on a diplomatic mission. Accounts of the time suggest it was an excuse to make certain Aegon left Nereis alone as she recovered from a failed childbirth. There he met Beleger Othrys. His affair with the Black Pearl continued for 10 years, though it was said that Beleger had a husband in every port, and that Aegon was but one of many. She gave birth to 3 children during the decade, 2 girls and a boy of doubtful paternity. Children of the Black Pearl. Belinora, Nara, Valerian. Lady Barbara Bracken, the vivacious dark-haired daughter of Lord Bracken of Stonehenge, and a companion to the 3 princesses in Maidenvault. With Baelor's death in 171 and Viserys II's ascension to the throne, the princesses were once again permitted male company. Aegon, now Prince of Dragonstone and heir apparent, became entranced with 16-year-old Barbara. On his own ascent in 172, he named her father as his hand and openly took her for his mistress. She bore him a bastard only a fortnight before another set of twins, a stillborn boy and a girl, Daenerys, who survived, were delivered by Queen Nerys. With the queen lingering near death, the hand, Barbara's father, talked openly of wedding his daughter to the king. After the queen's recovery, the scandal proved Barbara's undoing, as young Prince Daeron and his uncle, the Dragon Knight, forced Aegon to send her and the bastard away. The boy, raised at Stonehenge by the Brackens, was called Aegor Rivers, but in time became known as Bitter Steel. Children by Barbara Bracken, Aegor Rivers, Bitter Steel. Lady Melissa Missy Blackwood, the best-loved of the king's mistresses. Both younger and prettier than Lady Barbara, albeit far less buxom, as well as more modest, Missy had a kind heart and generous nature that led even Queen Nerys herself, as well as the Dragon Knight and Prince Daeron, to befriend her. During the 5 years of her reign, Missy bore the king 3 bastards, most notably the boy Brynden Rivers, born 175, later called Blood Raven. Children by Melissa Blackwood, Maya, Gwynnis, Brynden, Blood Raven. Lady Bethany Bracken, Lady Barbara's younger sister. Bethany was groomed by her father and sister expressly to win the king's favor and displace Missy Blackwood. In 177, she caught Aegon's eye as he visited at Stonehenge to see his bastard son Aegor. By now, the king was fat and foul-tempered, but Bethany delighted him, and he took her back with him to King's Landing. However, Bethany found his royal embraces distressing. For comfort, she turned to a knight of the king's guard, Sir Terence Toyne. The pair was discovered abed by Aegon himself in 178. Sir Terence was tortured to death, and both Lady Bethany and her father were executed. When Sir Terence's brothers sought to avenge his death, Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight was slain while defending his brother, King Aegon. Children by Bethany Bracken, none. Lady Jane Lothston, daughter of Lady Philena, the king's first mistress, by either Lord Lucas Lothston or the king himself. Jane was brought to court by her mother in 178, when she was 14. Aegon made Lord Lothston his new hand, and it was said, but never proved, that he enjoyed mother and daughter together in the same bed. He soon gave Jane a pox he'd caught from the whores he'd been seeing after Lady Bethany's execution, and the Lothstons were then all sent from court again. Children by Jane Lothston, none. Serenie of Lys, sweet Serenie. A Lycian beauty from an ancient but impoverished line brought to court by Lord John Hightower, the new hand. Serenie was the most beautiful of Aegon's mistresses, but she was also reputed to be a sorceress. She died giving birth to the last of the king's bastard children, a girl called Shira Seastar, who became the greatest beauty in the 7 kingdoms, beloved of both her half-brothers, Bittersteel and Blood Raven, whose rivalry would ripen to hatred. Children by Serenie, Shira.
Viserys II, though both of the sons of King Aegon III were dead, his three daughters yet survived, and there were some amongst the small folk, and even some lords, who felt that the Iron Throne should by rights now pass to Princess Dana. They were few, however. A decade of isolation in the Maiden Vault had left Dana and her sisters without powerful allies, and memories of the woes that had befallen the realm when last a woman sat the Iron Throne were still fresh. Dana the Defiant was seen by many lords as being wild and unmanageable besides, and wanton as well, for a year earlier she had given birth to a bastard son she named Daemon, whose sire she steadfastly refused to name. The precedents of the Great Council of 101 and the Dance of the Dragons were therefore cited, and the claims of Balor's sisters were set aside. Instead, the crown passed to his uncle, the king's hand, Prince Viserys. It has been written that while Daeron, Ward, and Balor prayed, Viserys ruled. For 14 years he served as hand to his nephews, and before them he served his brother, King Aegon III. It is said he was the shrewdest hand since Septon Barth, though his good efforts were diminished in the reign of the broken king, who lacked any desire to please his subjects or win their love. In his Lives of Four Kings, Grand Maester Caith seems to hold little opinion, good or bad, of Viserys. But there are those who say that, by rights, the book should be about five kings, Viserys included. And yet Viserys is passed over for a discussion of his son, Aegon the Unworthy, instead. After his years as a hostage in Lys, following the dance, Viserys returned to King's Landing with a beautiful Lysene bride, Lera Roger, the daughter of a wealthy and influential noble house. Tall and willowy, with the silver-gold hair and purple eyes of Valyria, for the blood still runs strong in Lys, she was 7 years Viserys' elder. She was also a woman who never felt a part of the court, and was never truly happy there. Yet she gave him 3 children before she at last returned to her native Lys. The eldest was Aegon, born in the Red Keep in 135 AC, after Viserys' return from Lys. He was a robust lad, who grew to be handsome and charming, and also irresponsible and capricious, devoted to his pleasures. He caused his father much trouble and toil, and the realm much pain. In 136 AC, Aemon followed. He was as robust as Aegon as an infant, and as beautiful to look upon. But his brother's faults were not in him. He proved the greatest jouster and swordsman of his age, a knight worthy to bear Dark Sister. He became known as the Dragon Knight for the 3-headed dragon crest wrought in white gold upon his helm. To this very day, some call him the noblest knight who ever lived, and one of the most storied names to ever serve in the King's Guard. The last of Viserys' children was his only daughter, Nerys, born in 138 AC. She had skin so pale that it seemed almost translucent, men said. She was small of frame, and made smaller by having little appetite, with very fine features, and singers wrote songs in praise of her eyes, a deep violet in hue, and very large, framed by pale lashes. She loved Aemon best of her brothers, for he knew how to make her laugh, and he had something of the same piety that she possessed, while Aegon did not. She loved the Seven as dearly as she loved her brother, if not more so, and might have been her scepter, if her lord father had allowed it. But he did not, and Viserys instead wed her to his son Aegon in 153 AC, with King Aegon III's blessing. The singers say that Aemon and Nerys both wept during the ceremony, though the histories tell us Aemon quarreled with Aegon at the wedding feast, and that Nerys wept during the bedding rather than the wedding. There are those who write that many of the follies of the young dragon and Balor the Blessed originated in Prince Viserys, while others argue that Viserys moderated the worst of their obsessions as best he could. Though his reign lasted little more than a year, it is instructive to consider his reforms of the royal household and its functions. The establishment of a new royal mint, his efforts to increase trade across the narrow sea, and his revisions of the code of laws that Jaehaerys the Conciliator had established during his long reign. Viserys II had within him the capacity to be a new conciliator, for no king had ever been shrewder or more capable. Tragically, a sudden illness carried him away in 172 AC. It need not be said that some found the illness and its swiftness suspicious, but none dare speak their suspicion at the time. It would be more than a decade before the first accusation was put to paper that Viserys had been poisoned by none other than his successor, his son Aegon. Is there truth to this suspicion? We cannot say for certain. But given all the infamous and corrupt deeds of Aegon the Unworthy, both before and after he assumed the crown, it cannot be discounted. Aegon the Fourth. With his father's death in 172 AC, Aegon, the fourth of his name, came at last to the throne that he had coveted as a boy. He had been comely in his youth, skilled with lance and sword, a man who loved to hunt and hawk and dance. He was the brightest prince at court in his generation, and was admired for his wit. But he had one great flaw. He could not rule himself. His lusts, his gluttony, his desires, they all controlled him utterly. Seated upon the Iron Throne, his misrule began with small acts of pleasure, but in time his appetites knew no bounds, and his corruption led to acts that haunted the realm for generations. Aenys was weak, and Maegor was cruel, Caith writes. And Aegon II was grasping, but no king before or after would practice so much willful misrule. Aegon soon filled his court with men chosen not for their nobility, honesty, or wisdom, but for their ability to amuse and flatter him. And the women of his court were largely those who did the same, letting him slake his lusts upon their bodies. On a whim, he often took from one noble house to give to another, as he did when he casually appropriated the great hills called the Teats from the Brackens and gifted them to the Blackwoods. For the sake of his desires, he gave away priceless treasures, as he did when he granted his hand, Lord Butterwell, a dragon's egg in return for access to all three of his daughters. He deprived men of their rightful inheritance when he desired their wealth, as rumours claim he did following the death of Lord Plum upon his wedding day. For the small folk, his reign might have been a source of gossip and amusement to the lords of the realm who did not stay at court and who did not wish to have Aegon make free with their daughters. He might have seemed strong and decisive, frivolous, but largely harmless. But to those who dared enter his circle, he was too mercurial, too greedy, and too cruel to be anything but dangerous. It was said of Aegon that he never slept alone, and did not count a night complete until he had spent himself in a woman. His carnal lust was satiated by all manner of women, from the highest born of princesses to the meanest whore, and he seemed to make no difference between them. In his last years, Aegon claimed he had slept with at least 900 women. The exact number eluded him, but that he only truly loved 9. Queen Nereus, his sister, was not counted among them. The 9 mistresses came from near and far, and some gave him natural children. But each and every one, save the last, was dismissed when he grew weary of her. However, one of those natural children came from a woman not accounted his mistress, Princess Dana, the Defiant. Damon was the name Dana gave to this child, for Prince Damon had been the wonder and the terror of his age, and in later days that was seen as a warning of what the boy would become. Damon Waters was his full name when he was born in 170 A.C. At that time, Dana refused to name the father, but even then Aegon's involvement was suspected. Raised at the Red Keep, this handsome youth was given the instruction of the wisest maesters and the best masters at arms at court, including Sir Quentin Ball, the fiery knight called Fireball. He loved nothing better than deeds of arms and excelled at them, and many saw in him a warrior who would one day be another dragon knight. King Aegon knighted Damon in his 12th year when he won a squire's tourney, thereby making him the youngest knight ever made in the time of the Targaryens, surpassing Maegor the First, and shocked his court, kin, and council by bestowing upon him the sword of Aegon the Conqueror, Blackfyre, as well as lands and other honors. Damon took the name Blackfyre thereafter. Queen Nereis, the one woman Aegon the Fourth bedded, in whom he took no pleasure, was pious and gentle and frail, and all these things the king misliked. Childbirth also proved a trial to Nereis, for she was small and delicate. When Prince Daeron was born on the last day of 153 A.C., Grand Maester Alford warned that another pregnancy might kill her. Nereis was said to address her brother thus, "I have done my duty by you and given you an heir. I beg you let us live henceforth as brother and sister." We are told that Aegon replied, "That is what we are doing." Aegon continued to insist his sister perform her wifely duties for the rest of her life. Matters between them were inflamed further by Prince Aemon, their brother, who had been inseparable from Nereis when they were young. Aegon's resentment of his noble, celebrated brother was plain to all, for the king delighted in slighting Aemon and Nereis both at every turn. Even after the Dragon Knight died in his defense, and Queen Nereis perished in childbed the year after, Aegon the Fourth did little to honor their memory. The king's quarrels with his close kin became all the worse after his son, Daeron, grew old enough to voice his opinions. Case, Lives of Four Kings, makes it plain that the false accusations of the queen's adultery made by Sir Murgil Hastwick were instigated by the king himself, though at the time Aegon denied it. These claims were disproved by Sir Murgil's death in a trial by combat against the Dragon Knight. That these accusations came at the same time as Aegon and Prince Daeron were quarrelling over the king's plans to launch an unprovoked war against Dorne was surely no coincidence. It was also the first, but not the last time, that Aegon threatened to name one of his bastards as his heir instead of Daeron. After the deaths of his siblings, the king began to make barely veiled references to his son's alleged illegitimacy, something he dared only because the Dragon Knight was dead. His courtiers and hangers-on ate the king, and his calumny spread. In the last years of his reign, Prince Daeron proved the chief obstacle to Aegon's misrule. Some lords of the realm clearly saw opportunity in the increasingly corpulent, gluttonous king, who could be convinced to part with honors, offices, and lands for the promise of pleasures. Others, who condemned the king's behavior, began to flock to Prince Daeron, Despite all his threats and calumnies and tasteless japes, the king never formally disowned his son. Accounts differ as to why. Some suggest that some shriveled part of Aegon still knew honour, or at least shame. The likeliest cause, however, was that he knew such an act would bring war to the realm. For Daeron's allies, chief amongst them the Prince of Dorne, whose sister Daeron had wed, would defend his rights. Perhaps it was for this reason that Aegon turned his attention to Dorne. Using the hatred for the Dornishmen that still burned in the marches, the Stormlands, and the Reach, to suborn some of Daeron's allies and use them against his most powerful supporters. Fortunately for the realm, the king's plans to invade Dorne in 174 AC proved a complete failure. Though his grace built a huge fleet, thinking to succeed as Daeron the young dragon had done, it was broken and scattered by storms on its way to Dorne. This was far from the greatest folly of Aegon the Fourth's stillborn invasion of Dorne, however, for his grace had also turned to the dubious pyromancies of the ancient guild of alchemists, commanding them to build me dragons. These wood and iron monstrosities, fitted with pumps that shot jets of wildfire, might perhaps have been of some use in a siege, but Aegon proposed to drag these devices up and through the Boneway, where there are places so steep that the Dornishmen have carved steps. They did not come even that far, however, for the first of the dragons went up in flames in the Kingswood, far from the Boneway. Soon all seven were burning. Hundreds of men burned in those fires, along with almost a quarter of the Kingswood. After that the king gave up his ambitions and never spoke of Dorne again. The reign of this unworthy monarch came to an end in 184 AC, when King Aegon was 49 years of age. He was grossly fat, barely able to walk, and some wondered how his last mistress, Serenae of Lys, the mother of Shira Seastar, could ever have withstood his embraces. The king himself died a horrible death, his body so swollen and obese that he could no longer lift himself from his couch, his limbs rotting and crawling with flesh-worms. The maesters claimed they had never seen its like, while Septons declared it a judgment of the gods. Aegon was given milk of the poppy to dull his pain, but elsewise little could be done for him. His last act before his death, all accounts agree, was to set out his will. And in it, he left the bitterest poison the realm ever knew. He legitimized all of his natural children, from the most base-born to the great bastards, the sons and daughters born to him by women of noble birth. Scores of his natural children had never been acknowledged. Aegon's dying declaration meant naught to them. For his acknowledged bastards, however, it meant a great deal. And for the realm, it meant blood and fire for 5 generations. Daeron the Second. In the 184th year since Aegon's conquest, Aegon the Fourth, the Unworthy, at last let go of his life. His son and heir, Prince Daeron, departed Dragonstone within the fortnight after learning of his father's demise, and was swiftly crowned by the High Septon in the Red Keep. He chose to be crowned with his father's crown, a decision likely intended to quell any remaining doubts about his legitimacy. Daeron then acted swiftly to put right many of the things that Aegon had put wrong, beginning by removing all the members of the king's small council and replacing them with men of his own choosing, most of whom proved wise and capable counsellors. It was a year and more before the city watch was similarly repaired, for King Aegon had often used promotion to the watch as a way to shower largesse on those he most favoured, and they in turn made sure that the brothels and even the decent women of the city, were available for Aegon's lusts. Daren did not stop there, however. In his efforts to improve those things that his father had corrupted or had left to rot through malign neglect, he was conscientious in his duties to the realm and sought to stabilize it in the wake of Aegon's deathbed decree, which legitimized all his bastard half-siblings. Although he could not and would not rescind his father's last wishes, he did what he could to keep the great bastards close, treating them honorably and continuing the incomes that the king had bestowed on them. He paid the dowry that Aegon had promised to the Archon of Tyrosh, thereby seeing his half-brother, Daemon Blackfyre, wed to Rhoann of Tyrosh as Aegon had desired. For all that, Sir Daemon was only 4 and 10. On their wedding day, he had gone to Daemon a tract of land near the Blackwater, with the right to raise a castle. Some said he did such things to assert his rule and legitimacy over the great bastards, and others because he was kind and just. But whatever the truth, such efforts sadly proved in vain. Yet his realm was not marked solely by the question of the great bastards, or even Aegon's misrule. His marriage to Moriah of Dorne, now Queen of the Seven Kingdoms, had been happy and fruitful, and one of his earliest significant acts after assuming the throne was to begin negotiations with his good brother, Prince Maron, to unify Dorne under Targaryen rule. 2 years of negotiation later, an agreement was reached in which Prince Maron agreed to be betrothed to Daeron's sister, Daenerys, once she was of age. They were wed the following year, and with that marriage, Prince Maron knelt and swore his oaths of fealty before the Iron Throne. King Daeron raised up the Dornish prince to great acclaim, and together they departed the Red Keep and rode to the Great Sept to lay a golden wreath at the foot of the statue of Baelor the Blessed, while proclaiming, "Baelor, your work is done." It was a great moment, at last unifying the realm from the Wall to the Summer Sea, as Aegon the Conqueror had once dreamed, and doing so without the terrible cost of life that Daeron the Second's namesake, the young dragon, had paid. In the following year, Daeron raised a great seat in the Dornish marshes, near to where the boundaries of the Reach, the Stormlands, and Dorne met. Calling it Summer Hall to mark the peace he had created, it was more palace than castle, and lightly fortified at best. In the years to come, many sons of House Targaryen would hold the seat as Prince of Summer Hall. However, Prince Maron had won a few concessions in the accord, and the Lords of Dorne held significant rights and privileges that other great houses did not. Their right to keep the royal title first among them, but also the autonomy to maintain their own laws, the right to assess and gather the taxes due to the Iron Throne, with only irregular oversight from the Red Keep and other such matters. Dissatisfaction at these concessions was one of the seeds from which the first Blackfyre Rebellion sprang, as was the belief that Dorne held too much influence over the king. For Daeron II brought many Dornishmen to his court, some of whom were granted offices of note. Still, Daeron's reign quickly stabilized the realm, and he soon came to be called Daeron the Good by the small folk and noble lords alike. He was widely seen as just and good-hearted, even if some questioned the influence of his Dornish wife. And though he was no warrior, descriptions of the era note that he was small of frame, with thin arms, round shoulders, and a scholarly disposition. 2 of his 4 sons seemed all that could be wished in knight, lord, or heir. The eldest, Prince Baelor, won the name Breakspear at the age of 17, following his famous victory at Princess Daenerys' wedding tourney. He defeated Daemon Blackfyre in the final tilt, and his youngest son, Prince Maekar, seemed like to show a similar prowess. Yet too many men looked upon Baelor's dark hair and eyes and muttered that he was more Martell than Targaryen, even though he proved a man who could win respect with ease and was as open-handed and just as his father. Knights and lords of the Dornish Marshes came to mistrust Daeron, and Baelor as well, and began to look more and more to the old days, when Dornish men were the enemy to fight, not rivals for the king's attention or largesse. And then they would look at Daemon Blackfyre, grown tall and powerful, half a god among mortal men, and with the Conqueror's Sword in his possession, and wonder. The seeds of rebellion had been planted, but it took years for them to bear fruit. There was no final insult, no great wrong, that led Daemon Blackfyre to turn against King Daeron. If it was truly all for the love of Daenerys, how is it that 8 years passed before the rebellion bloomed? That was a long time to harbour thwarted love, especially when Rohan had already given him 7 sons and daughters besides, and Daenerys had also borne Prince Meereen several heirs. In truth, the seeds found fertile ground because of Aegon the Unworthy. Aegon had hated the Dornish and warred against them, and those lords who desired the return of those days, despite all the associated misrule, would never be happy with this peaceable king. Many famed warriors who looked with dismay on the peace in the realm and the Dornish in the king's court began to seek Daemon out. Perhaps at first Daemon Blackfyre merely indulged such talk for the sake of his vanity. After all, years had passed between the first men approaching Daemon and the actual rebellion. What then tipped Daemon over into proclaiming for the throne? It seems likely it was another of the great bastards, Sir Aegor Rivers, called Bittersteel. Perhaps it was his Bracken blood that made Aegor so choleric and so quick to take offence. Perhaps it was the ignominious fall of the Brackens in King Aegon's esteem, leading to his exile from Aegon's court. Or perhaps it was only his rivalry with his half-brother and fellow bastard Brynden Rivers, who had been able to maintain his close relations at court. For Blood Raven's mother had been well loved during her life and was fondly remembered. So the Blackwoods did not suffer as the Brackens did when the king cast off his respective mistresses. Whatever the case may be, Aegor Rivers soon began to press Daemon Blackfyre to proclaim for the throne, and all the more so after Daemon agreed to wed his eldest daughter, Carla, to Aegor. Bitter his steel may have been, but worse was his tongue. He spilled poison in Daemon's ear, and with him came the clamouring of other knights and lords with grievances. In the end, years of such talk bore their fruit, and Daemon Blackfyre made his decision. Yet it was a decision he made rashly, for word soon reached King Daeron that Blackfyre meant to declare himself king within the turn of the moon. We do not know how word came to Daeron, though Meereen's unfinished The Red Dragon and The Black suggests that another of the great bastards, Brynden Rivers, was involved. The king sent the king's guard to arrest Daemon before he could take his plans for treason any further. Daemon was forewarned, and with the help of the famously hot-tempered knight, Sir Quentin Ball, called Fireball, he was able to escape the Red Keep safely. Daemon Blackfyre's allies used this attempted arrest as a cause for war, claiming that Daeron had acted against Daemon out of no more than baseless fear. Others still named him Daeron Forceborn, repeating the calumny that Aegon the Unworthy himself was said to have circulated in the later years of his reign, that he had been sired not by the king, but by his brother, the Dragon Knight. In this manner did the first Blackfriar Rebellion begin, in the year 196 AC. Reversing the colours of the traditional Tregarian arms, to show a black dragon on a red field, the rebels declared for Princess Dana's bastard son, Daemon Blackfyre, first of his name, proclaiming him the eldest true son of King Aegon IV, and his half-brother, Daeron the Bastard. Subsequently, many battles were fought between the black and red dragons in the Vale, the Westerlands, the Riverlands, and elsewhere.
It has been said in the years after Daemon Blackfyre proved a traitor that his hatred of Daeron began to grow early. It was Aegon's desire, not Daemon's, that he be wed to Rohan of Tyrosh. Instead, Daemon had developed a passion for Daeron's sister, young Princess Daenerys. Only 2 years younger than Daemon, the princess supposedly loved the bastard prince in turn, if the singers can be believed, but neither Aegon IV nor Daeron II were willing to let such feelings rule in matters of state. Aegon saw more profit in a tie to Tyrosh, perhaps because its fleet would be of use if he made another attempt to conquer Dorne. This seems plausible enough, but a different tale claims that Daemon was not so much opposed to wedding Rohan of Tyrosh as he was convinced that he could follow in the footsteps of Aegon the Conqueror and Maegor the Cruel, and have more than one bride. Aegon might even have promised to indulge him in this. Some of Blackfyre's partisans later claimed this was the case, but Daeron was of a different mind entirely. Not only did Daeron refuse to permit his brother more than one wife, but he also gave Daenerys his hand to Maron Martell, as part of the bargain to finally unite the Seven Kingdoms with Dorne. Whether Daenerys loved Daemon, as those who rose for the Black Dragon later claimed, who could say? In the years afterward, Daenerys was never aught but a loyal wife to Prince Maron, and if she mourned Daemon Blackfyre, she left no record of it.
The rebellion ended at the Red Grass Field, nigh on a year later. Some have written of the boldness of the men who fought with Daemon, and others of their treason. But for all their valour in the field, and their enmity against Daeron, theirs was a lost cause. Daemon and his elder sons, Aegon and Aemon, were brought down beneath the withering fall of arrows sent by Brynden Rivers and his private guards, the Raven's Teeth. This was followed by Bitter Steel's mad charge, with Blackfyre in his hand, as he attempted to rally Daemon's forces. Meeting with Blood Raven in the midst of the charge, a mighty duel ensued, which left Blood Raven blinded in one eye and set Bitter Steel fleeing. But the battle came to an end when Prince Balor Breakspear appeared with a host of Stormlords and Dornishmen, falling on the rebel rear, whilst the young prince, Maekar, rallied what remained of Lord Aeron's fan and made an implacable anvil against which the rebels were hammered and destroyed. 10,000 men had died for Daemon Blackfyre's vanity, and many more were wounded and maimed. King Daeron's efforts at peace had been shattered, through no fault of his own, save perhaps too much mercy for his envious half-brother. In the aftermath, King Daeron showed a sternness that few expected. Many lords and knights who had supported the Black Dragon had lands and seats and privileges stripped from them and were forced to give over hostages. Daeron had trusted them, had done all he could to rule justly, and still they turned against him. Daemon Blackfyre's surviving sons fled to Tyrosh, their mother's home, and with them went Bitter Steel. The realm would continue to be troubled by the claims of the Blackfriars pretenders for four more generations, until the last of the descendants of Damon Blackfriars, through the male line, was sent to the grave.
With his half-brothers dealt with, and the strength of his sons and heirs supporting him, many thought that King Daeron had now ensured that the realm would be under Targaryen rule for centuries to come. Few could doubt that Baelor Breakspear would be a great king, for he was the heart of chivalry and the soul of wisdom, and came to serve his father most ably as hand. But no man can know the will of the gods. Baelor Breakspear was cut down in his prime by his own brother Maekar at the tourney at Ashford in the year 209 AC. It was not in the tilt or the melee, but in a trial of seven, the first in a century, in which Baelor fought on behalf of a lowly hedge knight, of no parentage of note. His death was a mishap, almost certainly, and it is written that Prince Maekar always bitterly regretted Baelor's passing, and marked its anniversary every year. Yet Baelor died, and doubtless Maekar and the realm wondered if one hedge knight was worth the loss of the Prince of Dragonstone and the Hand of the King. But then they did not know how high that hedge knight would rise, though that is a different history. Baelor had sons, the young princes Baelor and Mataris, and so too did Maekar, and the king had two other sons besides, though the realm was less certain about Aerys, bookish and obsessed with arcane matters, and Rhaegal, a sweet boy, touched by madness. But then the great spring sickness swept the seven kingdoms, affecting all save the Vale and Dawn, where they closed the ports and mountain passes. Worst hit of all was King's Landing. The High Septon, the Seven's voice on earth, died, as did a third of the most devout, and nearly all the Silent Sisters in the city. Corpses were piled in the ruins of the Dragon Pit until they stood 10 feet high, and in the end, Blood Raven had the pyromancers burn the corpses where they lay. A quarter of the city went up in flames along with them, but there was nothing else to be done. Worse still, the sons of Baelor Breakspear were amongst those carried away, as was Daeron II, whom many called the Good. He had reigned for 25 years, and most of those years saw peace and plenty for the realm.
In Essos, Bittersteel gathered exiled lords and knights, and their descendants to him. He formed the Golden Company in 212 AC, and soon established it as the foremost free company of the disputed lands. "Beneath the gold, the bitter steel," became their battle cry, renowned across Essos. After Bitter Steel, the company was led by descendants of Daemon Blackfyre, until the last of them, Maelys the Monstrous, was slain in the Stepstones.
Aerys the First. Assuming the throne in 209 AC, Daeron's second son Aerys had never imagined he would be king, and was singularly ill-suited to sit the Iron Throne. Aerys was learned in his way, though his interests were largely to do with dusty tomes concerned with ancient prophecy and the higher mysteries. Wed to Eleanor Penrose, he never showed an interest in getting her with child, and rumor had it that he had even failed to consummate the marriage. His small council, at their wits' end, hoped it was simply some dislike of her that moved him, and thus they urged him to put her aside to take another wife. But he would not hear of it. Donning the crown during the great spring sickness, Aerys I faced a realm in turmoil, from the first. Hardly had the plague begun to ebb when Dagon Greyjoy, Lord of the Iron Islands, sent ironborn ships reaving all up and down the shores of the Sunset Sea. Whilst across the narrow sea, Bitter Steel plotted with the sons of Daemon Blackfyre. Perhaps it was because of these difficulties that Ares turned to Brynden Rivers to serve as his hand.
It has been suggested by some that a likelier cause for Blood Raven's rise to power was the fact that Ares's interest in arcane lore and ancient history matched that of Rivers, whose studies of the higher mysteries were an open secret at the time. Bloodraven had already risen to prominence at the court, but few expected that Ares would name him Hand. When he did, it kindled a quarrel between the king and his brother, Prince Makar, who had expected the handship to come to him. Thereafter, Prince Makar departed King's Landing for Summer Hall for years to come.
Bloodraven proved to be a capable hand, but also a master of whisperers, who rivaled Lady Misery, and there were those who thought that he and his half-sister Anne Paramore, Shearer Seastar, used sorcery to ferret out secrets. It became common to refer to his thousand eyes and one, and men both high and low began to distrust their neighbor for fear of their being a spy in Bloodraven's employ. Yet Ares had need of spies, given the trouble that followed the great spring sickness. Summer came, and with it a drought that lasted more than 2 years. Many blamed the king, and many more accused Bloodraven. There were poor brothers who preached treason, and knights and lords as well, and amongst those were some who whispered a specific treason, that the Black Dragon must return from across the narrow sea and take his rightful place. Lord Gorman Peak was at the center of an attempt to bring about a new uprising. For his role in the first Blackfyre Rebellion, Peak had been stripped of two of the three castles his house had held for centuries. After the drought and the great spring sickness, Lord Gorman convinced Daemon Blackfyre's eldest surviving son, Daemon the Younger, to cross the narrow sea and make a play for the throne.
That Daemon the Younger dreamed of becoming king is well known, as is the fact that Bittersteel did not support him in his effort to claim the throne. But why Bittersteel supported the father but refused the son remains a question that is sometimes argued over in the halls of the Citadel. Many will claim that young Daemon and Lord Gorman could not convince Bittersteel that their plan was sound, and, truth be told, it seems a fair argument. Peak was blind to reason in his thirst for revenge and the recovery of his seats, and Daemon was convinced that he would succeed, no matter the odds. Yet others suggest that Bittersteel was a hard man who had little use for anything beyond war, and mistrusted Daemon's dreams and his love of music and fine things. And others still raise an eyebrow at Daemon's close relationship to the young Lord Cocksure, and suggest that this would have troubled Aegor Rivers enough to deny the young man his aid.
The conspiracy came to a head in 211 AC at the wedding tourney at Whitewalls, the great seat that Lord Butterwell had raised near the God's Eye. This was the same Butterwell who had once been Daeron's hand, until the king had dismissed him in favour of Lord Hayford because of his suspicious failure to act successfully against Daemon Blackfyre in the early days of his rebellion. At Whitewalls, under pretense of celebrating Lord Butterwell's marriage and competing in the tournament, many lords and knights had gathered, all of whom shared a desire to place a Blackfyre on the throne. Were it not for the fact that Bloodraven had informants among the conspirators, Daemon the Younger could have launched a troubling rebellion from within the heart of the Riverlands. But even before the tourney had concluded, the hand turned up outside Whitewalls with a host of his own, and the second Blackfyre Rebellion ended before it could truly be said to have begun. Gorman Peak was among the conspirators executed in the wake of the thwarted rebellion, while others, such as Lord Butterwell, suffered the loss of land and seats As for Damon, he lived on for several more years, a hostage in the Red Keep. Some wondered at his imprisonment, but the wisdom of it was plain. His next eldest brother, Hagon, could not claim the throne if Damon was still alive. The second Blackfyre Rebellion proved a debacle, but that was not always to be the case. In 219 AC, Hagon Blackfyre and Bitterstill launched the third Blackfyre Rebellion. Of the deeds done then, both good and ill, of the leadership of Makar, the actions of Arian Brightflame, the courage of Makar's youngest son, and the second duel between Bloodraven and Bitterstill, we know well. The pretender Hagen I Blackfyre died in the aftermath of battle, slain treacherously after he'd given up his sword. But Sir Aegar Rivers, Bittersteel, was taken alive and returned to the Red Keep in chains. Many still insist that if he had been put to the sword then and there, as Prince Arian and Blood Raven urged, it might have meant an early end to the Blackfyre ambitions. But that was not to be. Though Bittersteel was tried and found guilty of high treason, King Ares spared his life, instead commanding that he be sent to the Wall to live out his days as a man of the Night's Watch. That proved a foolish mercy, for the Blackfyres still had many friends at court, some of them only too willing to play the informer. The ship carrying Bittersteel and a dozen other captives was taken in the narrow sea on the way to Eastwatch by the sea, and Aegor Rivers was freed and returned to the Golden Company. Before the year was out, he crowned Hagon's eldest son, King Damon III Blackfyre, in Tyrosh, and resumed his plotting against the king who had spared him. King Ares sat the Iron Throne for the better part of two more years before dying in 221 AC of natural causes. In the course of that reign, His Grace had recognized a series of heirs, though none were children of his body. Ares died without issue, his marriage still unconsummated. His brother Rhaegal, third son of Daeron the Good, had predeceased him, choking to death upon a lamprey pie in 215 AC during a feast. Rhaegal's son, Aelor, then became the new prince of Dragonstone, and heir to the throne, only to die 2 years after, slain in a grotesque mishap by the hand of his own twin sister and wife, Aelora, under circumstances that left her mad with grief. Sadly, Aelora eventually took her own life after being attacked at a masked ball by three men, known to history as the Rat, the Hawk, and the Pig. The last of the heirs Ares recognized before his death would be the one to succeed him to the throne, the king's sole surviving brother, Prince Makar. Makar the First. Makar was an energetic king and a warrior of note, but also a harsh man, quick to judge and to condemn. He had never possessed his brother Balor's gifts that made friends and allies come easily, and after his brother's death at his hands, however inadvertent, he became even more stern and unforgiving. Such was his desire to split from the past that he had a new crown made, a warlike crown with black iron points in a band of red gold. Since Aegon the Conqueror's crown had been lost after Daeron the First's death in Dorne. Yet Makar ruled in a time of relative peace between two of the Blackfyre rebellions, and what turmoil there was in his reign was largely sparked by his own sons. The chief issue of Makar's reign was the question of his heirs. He had a number of sons and daughters, but there were those who had reason to doubt their fitness to rule. The eldest, Prince Daeron, was known as the Drunken, and preferred to be styled Prince of Summerhall because he found Dragonstone such a gloomy abode. Next after him,